I would just like to introduce Andrew Bartlett from Australia, who has taken a very deep look at the Samba 3.0 authentication code, which used to be a bit of a mess before. I think he's going to explain how he has cleaned it up a bit.
Yeah. I started with the Samba team sort of June, July last year, and for some absurd reason I decided to attack Samba authentication. It's now been almost completely rewritten, and we're allowing a lot more flexibility in what can be done, a lot more things can be plugged in. I'm also looking at the PassDB stuff, so this is where you could, with LDAP and things like that. Anyway, might as well start with a bit of a background of what we're actually dealing with in SIFS and authentication. It's something that's grown over the years, like most things. It started out with just a plain text authentication, then people decided that really wasn't secure and that we needed some kind of challenge response, and we had the Landman 1 protocol brought in. The LM challenge response protocol, this has then been upgraded to NTLM, NTLM V2, which was discussed a little bit earlier as something we need to attack, and Kerberos in the latest versions of the protocol. I'm going to sort of explain the two types of passwords in the NTLM system. We don't deal with the plain text password, particularly we always convert it into this hash, which is plain text equivalent and just a nice 16-byte long thing you can do, password hash you can then do things with. In particular, you then prove you know it by the NTLM challenge response system. Basically, it's the two hashes are cryptographic hashes, and then the whole basis of the protocol is that your Samba server will send you 8 bytes of random stuff. Your job is to get the hash out of the user, to run more DES over it, and then send back 24 bytes. That then proves to the server that you have the plain text passwords or their equivalent when you started, and no one in the middle can see what's going on. The problem this causes is that the fast server doesn't get the plain text password. It shouldn't if you want to secure a protocol in this way. But it means that the easiest way to do pluggable authentication, PAM, just doesn't work. There are hacks to make clients send plain text passwords, but they have various problems. Newer clients won't do it without a registry hack. Older clients that will do it will prompt you for a password every time, and it's a mess. What's more, they'll uppercase the password to boot, so we're going to have to run our own password cracker over the thing. It's messy. So with 3.0, we overhauled most of the authentication code, putting in a choke point so that all authentications come to one point to be verified. Previously, we would verify at one place over here, another place over there. It made it very hard to ensure we had a consistent policy. For example, a lot of sites want the policy of the server not accepting LM hashes as passwords because, clicked through rather quickly earlier, the LM protocol uppercases the password and then does some very basic encryption on it. That means that if you allow a user to log in with LM authentication, then there's all the case sensitivity of your password database has just gone out the window. They can just decide not to send the NT hash as well and just try half as many passwords. So what we've done is we've got it so that we can now, in the same way, authenticate against an NT domain, local password file, and a few other bits and pieces, providing the choke point and then off to different ways of checking passwords. And that's what I'm referring to in the top bit of this slide with pluggable NTLM authentication. We'll also look at when a user is in a local password file, what type of password file is it? Whether it's an LDAP directory, whether it's a TDB, which is one of the experimental backends, whether it's the good old SMB password file we all know and hate. We're also looking at allowing people, and I've seen a number of these already, to write their own password databases. We've got PDB plugin, which allows you to load a loadable object, which could do anything. We've got a PDB MySQL, which puts all usernames and passwords in a MySQL database. I can imagine that somebody will soon write a PDB Oracle or something. Someone was on the list saying they were doing something similar with an old version of Samba. This allowed them to do it properly. We also got code in Samba 3, which allows you to have multiple pass DBs. Why have one? Why not allow 2, 3, 10? It means that, for example, you could have some users only in your local SMB password file, maybe just the admin users, and then other users off in the LDAP directory, which might be enterprise-wide. The stackable pass DB, you can also modify entries in any one of them, but you only add them to the first so as to keep some sanity to the system. One of the major areas I've been working with recently is Samba isn't the only piece of software that wants to talk NTLM authentication. There is an Apigee module that wants to do it. There is a Squid wants to do it. Because Internet Explorer has this capability to do what they call secure password authentication or something interesting like that. Basically, it's NTLM forced over the HTTP protocol. It's ugly as hell, but clients are speaking it. So for example, people with large Windows installations want to run Squid and want to authenticate with something more useful than plain text passwords, with also the advantage that Windows thinks this thing's secure, therefore will send it automatically. So people then go out to their web browser and they don't have to punch in their password on the way out because Windows is doing it all for them. So I've been working with the Squid developers to allow their NTLM code to talk to WinBind, which talks to the NT domains. This is a lot more efficient than the previous methods of doing this, which were effectively a man-in-the-middle attack, where you put your Squid server in between the client and the server and pass challenges back and forth, and it's a mess. You've got to keep both sides happy at once, and if one side dies, then everything just goes kaput. That's the same thing that we do with security equals server, which is why we try to get people to run security equals domain, because security equals server is the same, having to keep both ends happy, and it really is a mess. There are also other projects. I'm interested in looking at the VPN protocols that Microsoft uses are similarly based on being able to do it to a domain member, and I see no reason why we can't write the code so that PPPD and therefore PopTop can then pass these NT credentials around, and instead of having to have password databases especially for the VPN, they can again use the enterprise-wide database. One of the things this has changed with the overhaul, one of my first things I tried to do is make nothing change as far as the user was concerned. A few things have changed. We can now allow admins that think they know what they're doing to actually specify which places you will authenticate Samba against. You can decide that to authenticate locally or against NT domains, or we can allow interesting combinations of the two and the like, if you know what you're doing. We can also allow a single choke point for guest logons. A lot of people, while you can't do it with like a domain controller or anything, it's possible to run a file server in such a way that only authenticated users can get in. And with allowing only NT hash logons and without allowing guests and things, we can create a moderately secure file server for environments that need to be paranoid about this kind of thing but still have to keep the Windows clients around. And also, one of the interesting things I've looked into is allowing WinBind, which is this sort of, currently it's a sort of everything daemon that does anything that we don't want to do in the main SMBD process. allow it to keep one connection between itself and the domain controller and have all these other things authenticate through it instead of every time a client connects to you, that SMBD having to set up its own TCP connection to the domain controller, go up the full protocol stack, get to the top where it says yes or no for this password and pull the whole thing down again. Depending on the load on your server, that can put quite a high load on your domain controller, and this allows us to reduce that. I've got this as a demonstration module at the moment. We're going to do some more things to make it more useful in future. Another thing I've done with the new code is to allow in PassDB accounts that exist in terms of passwords for our Windows clients, but don't actually exist in terms of the Unix system. In particular, I use this at my site, where I have generic passwords to allow people to access the internet, which don't get people file share access, don't have email accounts attached, don't have all these other things, and which I can then change the password daily, because if I try and block all internet access, I just get people after my neck. You know. We've got all our people, too often people come onto the site without having accounts set up beforehand. This allows me to do that with a lesser degree of risk, because I really like to keep my Unix accounts a little special. Also, I'll run through this fairly fast, also looking at the things I managed to get so far done, looking over the next few months and things to do, a bit of the work that JF is looking comes into the ACLs on PassDB. And once we get that kind of stuff working, we can make the password databases a lot more efficient. Currently, as JF alluded to, we rely on the operating system to tell us whether or not we're allowed to open a file or connect to something, and therefore to get to the password database. It'd be useful to be able to keep that database always open and to then just look it up all the time and do our own checks as to whether the user's allowed to do it. And in particular, the LDAP PassDB backend suffers from load problems. We do full connections to it for almost every little thing and then tear it all down again. So we're hoping that we can make some more things more efficient there. As I said, I'll run through this a little bit fast. People got any questions, things? I'll probably run over some other points depending on what people are actually interested in. It's often different to the things I want to talk about. Questions?
About SID to UID mapping and SID to GID mapping.
Okay, well, we'll have a look at that mess. As Fridge raised, one of the interesting areas, we always work in a Unix space in terms of basic file system operations, in terms of file ownerships on a file system, group ownerships, ACLs, they're all represented in a POSIX way. Unfortunately, our NT clients all talk these SIDs, which are a unique global representation of a user. You create a random bit for the first bit, then you get an incrementing number for the last bit. That random bit represents the domain and the last bit, the user or group. We've got to find a way to get back and forth between the two. It gets all tied in with all this because usually we store these in with the passwords. So we'll have the user's username, password and their RID, which is fine, as long as you make sure that you can do that for anyone. The really nasty bit is you've got to do that for somebody who you don't know exists. For example, someone may come into your server and say, I want an ACL that allows this SID to read this file. Now, this SID is entirely foreign to you, and one of the interesting problems we've been discussing around the team recently is, how do we even figure out what the heck it is? Because the SID won't even tell you whether it's a user or the group. If the domain happens to be one of your trusted domains somewhere, you can go off and you can ask, is this SID a user or is this SID a group? So you can then figure out, okay, I'm creating a group entry in my ACL. But if the remote domain's down, then what do you do then? If you get it wrong, things botch up badly. Even when we know everything, we've had a traditional algorithm in Samba where we take all Unix UIDs, we times them by 2 and we add 1,000. That then gets you the RID. And likewise for groups, you times the UID by 2, add 1,000 and plus 1. So we get this sort of algorithmic thing going where we can work out back and forth the two. But then we have these people who want to get rid of their NT servers. I mean, really, what do people want to do that for? But these people have their SIDs. The first bit's fine, we can just copy across the domain SID, but we've got these RIDs and they collide with this user and that user, and so then the same SID that was thread over in this domain currently belongs to bin or root. So we have to, one of the things we've got to work out probably a bit around this conference and the like is allowing people to pull across a remote domain's full database, including all the SIDs intact, so that all their clients still have the same file ownership, so that when they restore from a backup tape and things like that, that the files all get owned to the right people. And so we're doing some work. I've done a bit of work to ensure that from some of the PassDB backends, so we can, for example, shift the algorithmic reads out of the way, move them up, you know, a few thousand reads, and then put our stuff that we don't have any choice on, because it's fixed, in below that, or entirely removing algorithmic reads completely and keeping everything in a database. But it's one of these sort of areas that's not getting really easy answers, in particular when you've got to try and move in people from a domain that where you have to make sure you do things in the right order, because you might start allocating users and then find you have to add them and they're the same read. These things get a little hairy. That's the kind of things that we're looking at the moment. Oh, great. Laptops decide to die. Oh, well.
Andrew, I have a question.
Yep.
How does... You were talking about 3.0.
Yeah.
There's some LRIP support in 2.2. How does that relate to 3.0?
Okay, LDAP. The LDAP support's actually quite good. I've been using it at my site. It basically... They started off to be the same code. Jerry Carter was doing a lot of maintenance on it.
And on the 2.2 code.
In the 2.2 code, and that got brought across to head. And so the last release of 2.2 has basically where he finished off. I think I then bastardised it from there and added some other things of my own. But we've got the code in there for LDAP storing usernames and passwords. It's quite good in 2.2. I'm looking at doing some of the interesting things in head, which probably won't get backported because of the other infrastructure requirements, in particular the non-Unix accounts and a few other bits and pieces like that.
But I won't have an upgrade problem if I...
No, we're keeping the same schema. The only other interesting things we're doing with LDAP, we're possibly looking at using an Active Directory schema, in which case it will be a completely separate backend and will allow both to exist or scripts to migrate. But certainly legacy installations are safe. Other questions?
Can you speak a little more about the non-Unix users, especially they need to access the profile, the net logon share on the PDC. As which Unix user do they do that? As guest or what?
That's an interesting one. The way I've done it at the moment, I don't actually have people doing domain logons yet. I haven't got that far with what I do, my needs were, because the way Squid works, which is what I was trying to put the non-Unix accounts through, it just does a domain logon request, and which is the simple RPC, and never actually bothers to try and access anything as that user. I'm thinking of just making it access a profile as guest and then allowing people to point it at a generic profile or something. I'll have to work out whether there are ownership issues with that, but that's how I was intending to deal with it. Just some kind of... We already have a map to guest parameter, and I was going to allow a map to guest equals non-Unix account or something like that.
Are there any other questions? So, and many thanks to Andrew.
Okay. Thank you very much.